Blackstone Publishing presents A Conquest Impossible to Resist by Stephanie Lawrence. This book is read by Matthew Brenner. Chapter 1, March the 24th, 1851, Newmarket, England.
It looks like I've stumbled on a real prospect. Finally.
Prudence Sinster strode, skirts swishing, into her family's breakfast parlour. Her gaze on the letters she held in her hands, she advanced on the table.
Or perhaps I should say...
She glanced again at the signature and title at the end of the second page.
A potential prospect has found their way to us.
She halted by the head of the table, met her father's blue eyes, and held out the letter.
What do you think, Papa?
Her father, Demon Sinster, set down his knife and fork and took the two sheets. Prue nodded a good morning to her mother, seated at the foot of the table, and to her Aunt Patience, currently visiting, who occupied the chair on her mother's right, then circled the table to her usual place on her father's right, between her brother Nicholas and their father. Nicholas nodded at the letter.
When did that arrive?
Just now.
Prue shook out her napkin, then reached for the teapot.
Gilbert was sorting the mail as I passed.
Who's it from?
Toby, Prue's younger brother, was, as usual, sitting opposite her.
The Earl of Glengarra Castle in County Sligo, Ireland.
Prue took a long sip of her tea and slanted a glance at her father's face. A slight frown tangled his sandy brows. A good sign? Or the opposite? While her father, now in his 60s, remained the titular head of the Sinster stables, Prue, 29 years old and his eldest child, ran the breeding program, while Nicholas, not even a year younger, managed the day-to-day affairs of the racing stable. Toby, now 25, was an able second-in-command to them both, although his talents and interests aligned more closely with Prue's.
Glengarra writes, her father rumbled, that his late father had amassed a collection of horses purely for his private satisfaction. Apparently, the late Earl's guiding principle was to acquire horses that embodied the strongest and clearest features of the various bloodlines. The current Earl wishes to inquire if we have any interest in examining the collection with a view to an arrangement of mutual benefit.
Her father humphed, then folded the letter and laid it beside Prue.
He's included a short description of three horses as an indication of what the collection holds. However, he hasn't mentioned the size of the collection beyond that it's large, and he gives no specifics as to bloodlines.
True, Prue conceded. But given I've spent the last 20 and more months combing the length and breadth of the British Isles in an until now largely fruitless search for horses that will allow us to reintroduce the features of the Foundation bloodlines back into our bloodstock, thus reinvigorating the most desirable features, then I view the chance that Glengarra has in his stable at least one useful horse as a possibility too good to pass up.
Not fruitless, Toby corrected. You found that Barb stallion in Scotland last year.
Last June, Prue admitted. But that's the only one, and we need a great deal more if we want to lift the quality of our horses.
She journeyed all the way to Perthshire following a tenuous rumour of a beautiful bay horse owned by an eccentric Scottish lord. She tracked down the horse, and eventually, the lord. She'd bargained hard and had secured an exclusive licence to breed from the stallion. That was her first, and to date, only success in her patently necessary quest. Nicholas tapped Prue's elbow and pointed at the letter. She handed it over. While Nicholas read, Prue glanced at her father, who was frowning abstractedly and slowly tapping one finger on the tablecloth. Then she looked down the table at her